Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg talking with the author of a new biography on Milwaukee Bucks superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo. It was released yesterday.
The Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions for the first time in 50 years.
It's over. The Bucks have done it. The long wait has ended. After a half century, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
And Giannis Antetokounmpo is the superstar at the heart of the team. Not only does he have a national championship and two MVP trophies under his belt, but there's also a new biography on him. I recently talked with the author of Giannis, The Improbable Rise of an NBA MVP. It's about Antetokounmpo's Greek upbringing and his journey to American basketball stardom.
My name is Miren Fader, and I'm a staff writer at The Ringer.
Fader says Antetokounmpo was born in Sepolia, a neighborhood of Athens, Greece. She says life was tough. His parents had migrated from Nigeria, and they were undocumented, so finding work was hard.
So the parents would then bring the kids to sell items on the street or at upscale beaches and try to do whatever they could to put food on the table. And, you know, oftentimes they just wouldn't eat. So it was really, really tough. However, there was a lot of joy as well.
Antetokounmpo started playing basketball at age 13. He couldn't play on the elite local teams because of his immigration status, but some NBA scouts started to take notice anyway. By 2013, an 18-year-old Antetokounmpo was a scrawny but intriguing outsider as the NBA draft approached.
So the Milwaukee Bucks are choosing at number 15, and they decide to take a swing because it's Milwaukee.
With the 15th pick in the 2013 NBA draft, the Milwaukee Bucks select Giannis Antetokounmpo.
And you hope to get lucky? But you expect disappointment? You don't know if this Greek kid is going to work out, but he's really tall and he's charismatic and maybe he might be okay.
Antetokounmpo ended up being more than just okay. And Milwaukee was a great fit because the team allowed him time to get acclimated to life in the NBA and the U.S.
And not having the pressure of coming in, being deified as the superstar, enabled him to grow. The only pressure that Giannis felt was, how do I provide money for my family? How do I get my family to come to America? You know, his pressures were different than the average NBA rookie.
Fader says taking care of his family was so important to Antetokounmpo because of how tight-knit they had always been.
Giannis grew up watching how his dad would pretend he wasn't hungry and give his portions to his sons. And Giannis's brothers were his best friends, his comrades. They were always laughing. They always shared everything. There was no arguments because everything was communal.
The love that Antetokounmpo had for his family was on display in 2019 when he got emotional while accepting his first MVP award. He also thanked his teammates that night and the city of Milwaukee.
And I think the thing that endears fans to Giannis most and Giannis to this city is that these fans watched him grow up. They liked that he wasn't crowned king at age 13. And they liked that this came out of nowhere. That's the ultimate lesson of all from people that come from Milwaukee. You work hard and dream big. And Giannis has done that.
And now Antetokounmpo has two MVPs and a championship. And he signed a contract extension, so his future is in Milwaukee. So what does Fader think that future might look like?
Keep in mind, Giannis is 26 years old, and he is just beginning to mature, not just into a global basketball superstar, but into a man, a father. And I think we're going to see him use his platform and his voice in bigger ways beyond the basketball court. I think Giannis is primed to become more. I think he's going to share more of himself.
Miren Fader is a staff writer at The Ringer and the author of Giannis, The Improbable Rise of an NBA MVP. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent. And if you couldn't get enough of that Giannis Wisconsin life, Miren Fader will join us on the morning show next week to talk about her book, Giannis, The Improbable Rise of an NBA MVP. That's next Wednesday. That's August 18th at 8 a.m. Right now, Wisconsin is the leading producer of mink pelts in the United States, and the state leads the nation in the breeding of female mink. That's according to the USDA. Harvesting and selling mink fur is technically Wisconsin's oldest industry, with French settlers starting the fur trade in the 17th century. But the industry is facing a decline between a drop in domestic demand, trade issues with China, and more. And while the mink industry hopes to rebound, animal rights advocates hope that this signals a decline in the fur industry as a whole. And we want to hear from you. Are you a mink producer or do you work on a mink farm? How has your farm been doing during the pandemic? Have you faced overproduction at all in the last year? And what do you think about the state of the industry? Call 800-642-1234 or you can email ideas at WPR.org. Joining us now to talk about the state's mink industry is Dr. John Easley. He's a Sheboygan County veteran and Director of Research for Fur Commission USA. That's a nonprofit trade organization representing U.S. mink farmers. Dr. Easley, welcome to the morning show.
Well, thank you for having me.
So there has been a significant drop, certainly over the last year. What is to blame here for the drop in mink production?
Well, primarily it's due to the economic conditions that the industry is under at this point. There was an oversupply of mink pelts 4 or 5 years ago, and that caused the market to be depressed over these last few years, and the industry is just reacting to that situation now.
And can you talk a little bit about the price of the crop over the last few years? We can look at last year. It looks like there was a drop compared to 2019. Can you talk a little bit about the price of the crop?
Yeah, it just reflects the oversupply. The primary demand comes from countries outside the U.S., China, South Korea, Russia, Turkey, Greece, and there was an oversupply of product available, so that just depressed the price to the point that some producers decided that over the last few years that they would not continue to produce pelts anymore.
Now, you work with mink ranchers throughout Wisconsin. What have you heard from them about the state of the industry from their perspective?
Well, yeah, so it's been very challenging the last 3 years, but due to the change in the amount of production worldwide over the last year, prices are starting to rebound and come up to make it profitable again for the producers to continue to produce pelts. And so they are looking forward to being able to work with their livestock and continue family traditions.
We are talking with Dr. John Easley. He's a veterinarian and he's a consultant for the mink industry here in Wisconsin. And you talked a little bit just a second ago about, you know, that this is a family business. How long have some of these mink farms been established in Wisconsin?
Yeah, at least three generations that I know of. There's quite a history in Wisconsin of mink farming and pelt production going back to the 40s and 50s. So it's quite established here. There was a large number of farms back in those times, slowly with just like the rest of animal agriculture. When times get tougher, farms consolidate, get a little bit larger, and that's what we've seen in the mink industry also. So it reflects the normal progress that we see in animal agriculture.
Just a moment ago, you were also talking about how Wisconsin exports mink pelts largely abroad. And, you know, the United States and China have had an ongoing trade conflict. You know, the trade deficit with China, you know, went down by 19% in 2019. You know, how is that impacting the mink industry's bottom line in Wisconsin?
Well, I don't know if it has a major effect in itself. Certainly, anytime there's trade restrictions, it impacts you know all products. But the mink industry and the utilization of fur in China is a relatively small industry, but it's well utilized there. So there hasn't been a lot of impingements put upon the importation at this point, but hopefully demand will continue there, and thusly there'll be demand for the product that's being produced.
Our mink expert this morning is Dr. John Easley. He's a researcher with the Fur Commission USA. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the mink industry? What thoughts do you have overall about fur in general? Call in now, 800-642-1234. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we continue our conversation about the mink fur industry in Wisconsin. In 2020, the state's pelt output dropped about 60% compared to 2019, and the value of those pelts dropped by about 19%. Our guest right now is Dr. John Easley. He's a veterinarian based in Sheboygan County, and he's also a consultant with Fur Commission USA. That's a nonprofit trade organization representing mink ranchers and farmers and all that. And we want to hear from you. Retailers, do you sell fur or mink at your place of business? Maybe you purchase it for your own personal enjoyment. What questions do you have about the mink industry? Call 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. And I want to go to one of our callers right now. We have Eric in Green Bay. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I was just wondering exactly, is there any other use other than just the pelts from the animal? Do they get anything else out of it for sale to other countries? Do they, like the meat, do they get anything else out of it?
Eric, thank you for that call. Dr. Easley, tell us more.
Yeah, yes, there is. The carcasses after the pelt has been processed and can be utilized for protein meals that are produced depending on the area of the production. They can be utilized for other things. They are then rendered. Mink oil is used in a lot of different processes, you know, for different products. So that's a big byproduct also. But those are, yeah, those are the main things that are utilized. The pelt, the mink oil itself, and then the carcasses are rendered and then used for a protein meal.
Eric, thank you so much for that call. And Dr. Easley, I want to just switch gears a little bit because we've been in a pandemic for the last year. Mink to human transmission of COVID-19 has been reported in Denmark, the Netherlands, and in Michigan. We don't have any documented cases here in Wisconsin, but how are mink being affected by the virus on farms in the state?
Well, yeah, it's a major concern for the industry, and we've been addressing that in collaboration with USDA and the CDC. To understand the disease itself, mink, like people, are very susceptible to this virus. So we've worked to develop biosecurity protocols for the farms and for the people being involved on the mink farms, in collaboration with CDC and USDA. And then we've also worked in collaboration with the largest animal health company in the world, plus two other companies to produce vaccines that will help protect the mink from this virus. And those vaccines are being utilized this summer. It was a great effort by the company producing the vaccine to be able to get it all tested correctly, like they did with the human vaccines, and then be able to produce enough vaccine to be able to have it available for the great majority of our farms to inoculate their mink. And it's very, very much analogous to what's being utilized in the human population for most cases. It's a two-shot protocol, about 3 weeks apart, and you know, hopefully that will, along with the biosecurity, again, just like we're doing in the human population, to help prevent infection in the mink farms.
And you're a veterinarian, and you've been going out to administer some of these vaccines. What has that experience been like?
Well, I don't administer the vaccines. I've helped, you know, establish the ability for the producers to purchase the vaccines and to get it developed through this last 9 months. The producers vaccinate the animals themselves, which is pretty typical for most animal agriculture.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification. We are talking to Dr. John Easley right now. He's a Wisconsin veterinarian and a mink production consultant. And I want to go back to our callers right now. We have Carlito in Madison. Hi, Carlito.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, what did you want to ask about?
I'm kind of conflicted. We used to have a ferret. Ferrets being the cousins of minks, you sort of become sympathetic to the mink. Badgers being our state mascot and the wolverine, its cousin being the Michigan mascot, I find these animals not just intriguing but adorable. I also find cows adorable, but we eat the men and we drink the milk from the cows. How do we reconcile these feelings in our heart for these precious creatures of God and still sustain our families? How does one have generations of mink farming and put that together in their heart?
Carlito, thank you for that call. Dr. Easley, what is your response?
Well, and that's great that you know, they have the compassion for these animals and all animals in general. But again, we are trying to utilize these animals for not only for their pelts, but also, like I stated before, for other products that we can utilize. So we try not to to waste anything that's being produced. Again, the great majority of these mink are being produced on family farms. They're very good animal caretakers. They enjoy working with the animals. They think highly of them and try to raise them in the best environment that they can. From that standpoint, the Fur Commission USA sponsors a tremendous amount of research to understand the best way to manage these animals. And give them the best environment and the best situation for us to raise them in, so that they thrive in that environment. We have been selecting these animals from a breed standpoint, a breeding standpoint, genetically, to be able to thrive in these management situations that we have them in, just like the rest of animal agriculture. So, again, we're trying to do the best we can, you know, for this livestock that we're raising. And it is a part of animal agriculture. It's just another commodity that we are being able to derive from the use of animals. And certainly there is, a major effort put forth to understand these animals and make sure that we are raising them in the best environment that we can and handling them that way. We have herd certification programs that are in place that are third-party verified, that the farms have to meet a very strict set of protocols. They're certified by PACO, a certification process for all welfare programs. So I think the industry is doing as well and really better than a lot of other animal agricultural products that we're utilizing. We've had herd certification processes in place since 1985.
And Dr. Easley, you know, I want to go back to a point you made just a little bit ago about how mink are used, you know, the whole mink. And you had said something about that the mink meat, the carcass was used for protein meals. Can you explain really quickly, is that for animal feed or is that for human consumption?
Well, that would be for animal feed. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that. Let's go to one of our callers really quickly right now. We have Kenneth in Janesville. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. Hi. I was wondering if there are any designers or manufacturers of mink clothing in the state. I guess you call them furriers.
Kenneth, thank you for that call. Dr. Easley, we don't have a ton of time left, but who is maybe working with this product in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I'm not fully versed in that part of the industry, but yeah, there are multiple furriers still in Wisconsin and in the neighboring states, Chicago. So yeah, there is a small but active manufacturing portion still in the states here, but the majority of it is done overseas.
Dr. Easley, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dr. John Easley is a Sheboygan County veterinarian and director of research for Fur Commission USA. That's a group that advocates for the fur industry. Just ahead, we dive into Lake Michigan to visit a shipwreck sanctuary. An expert explains the pivotal role this archaeological site has in our state's history. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.